way back in the early 20-teens, a city fella from Minnesota and a wannabe cowpuncher from small town Iowa came together to swap tall tales over the airwaves. They made lots of friends along the way, but even more enemies. By chance, they made acquaintance with a sodbuster from over the other side of the county, who felt obliged to butt in on their little show and give them the what fors from time to time. After nigh on a decade of pointless blathering, one thing led to another, and they were unceremoniously tossed out on their ear from their little radio show. Eventually, this ragtag group found their way back together and decided to start a little podcast we like to call Dutch by Association.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 14 of the Dutch by Association podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barahona. Along with me, as always, are my good friends and co-hosts, Aaron Alonz and Mitch Geese.
Today's episode of the DBA Pod is brought to you by Super High Tech. Keep your kids ready for school in person or online with the latest in technology from Super High Tech. Laptops, desktops, tablets, phones, and more. Super High Tech, located in Sheldon, Orange City, and Sioux Center, and on the web at super-ht.com.
And we are brought to you by people like you, who may not give us money, but no, there's really nothing.
Oh, we need a sponsor.
We do.
That's fine. We need someone to pay for our beer.
We had a sponsor in
Coleman
July.
Didn't renew.
No.
Yeah, well, they also haven't paid yet, so... We're waiting to see where this train takes us.
I know a guy. Okay. Can bust some kneecaps.
That's yeah. Right. But yeah, thanks for joining us again. Episode 14 here of the Dutch by Association podcast. We had a big week this past week, even though we did not air. It was Aaron's birthday. He turned 40.
40. And woke up that morning on Saturday, the day I turned 40, my knees hurt. Which it's, I was like, oh, that's a thing when you're 40.
Well, just say it's from all that praying and not for all of the destruction you've caused down your body.
Oh, yeah. So, and we were going to do a big birthday bash, an open house at the house with the remodel and the addition and all that good stuff. And that was the original goal when we started in March. And just like every construction project, it's running behind. So, but we're shooting for September 5.
Oh, you're done. That's a drop dead date,
that
right?
That has to happen. And the contractor
he's having a party
me out today that I had just said, it's it.
Whatever. You were supposed to be done on the 15th.
Yeah, but that turns out contractors never believe finish dates. Ever. So
you're a contractor. Shouldn't you kind of know that?
It's true. I don't believe in end dates either. But September 5th, everybody here is invited.
You're going to put that out on...
No, here, like in this room. This room.
People in the room.
Yeah. Right. No, not everybody listening. Yeah. I can't afford that. Even if it is only
Lauren's
two
Lauren's already informed us that she's got other plans, so I'm just you can count her out. We did get an analytics update because, you know, God bless the internet, we can see what we're doing here. As of today, we are now heard in 27 states and 18 countries.
Whoa.
Thank you. Yeah. All these people that thought we were Dutch by Association, so we were probably talking about something completely different, went, oh gosh, no, right. Turn that off.
That counts as a listen.
Yeah, yep.
That counts
that's
as
right.
a listen.
We're getting, especially to our advertisers.
Amazing hits in the Netherlands.
We are, yes. Yeah, they like the tulips, but...
Wouldn't Belgium be, because it's associated with the Netherlands?
Okay, well, that would make sense.
Belgium's on the list.
Yeah, Belgium, yeah. Germany.
Austria.
Do we have any Luxembourg?
Yeah, we have some Luxembourgians. Yeah.
We're doing pretty well.
Yeah, let's just not waste any more time. We'll get into introducing our very special guest. We have the man who is vying for the 4th Congressional District seat, and that is one Mr. J.D. Scholten.
I think it's Scholten.
I think you mispronounced that way.
Well, how old were you when you realized you were pronouncing your name wrong?
So in high school, my vice principal was from Orange City originally.
Oh,
and so always said, Mr. Scholten. She goes, you pronounced your name wrong. And so, I don't know, because my dad's side is, he's part German, part Dutch. But when the Scholten side of it, it used to be von Scholten.
Oh, and, okay.
And so somehow we dropped the van and we picked up the Dutch, or I'm sorry, the German version of it.
Sure.
I don't know. So what was interesting is, like, my dad's side, we knew up to my great-grandfather, like, family tree. And when I played baseball in Belgium, all of a sudden I got this, my uncle got an email from a distant relative wanting to trace the family out. And we actually went from just that generation, which was my great-grandfather, all the way to, like, 1633.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Wow. So, like, our family farm used to be just out, it's in Harlem Amir, which is close to, and it was around the area where the Schiphol, the Amsterdam airport is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I never met the guy, but now we can trace our family back to 17th century. And
wow.
That's all the info I have. I don't know. Like,
but you've at least been there, so you've seen some of this stuff. Now, your career started as a baseball player.
Yeah, I got to play baseball for my dad at Morningside, who he coached there almost 30 years, and then had a chance to get drafted, turned it down my junior year, and I did all I could at the Division II level, and I wanted to see what I could do at the D1 level, and so I transferred in University of Nebraska. And got
sorry to hear that.
So I mean,
you're trying for public office in Iowa. All right,
good luck with that.
Just wanted to clear that up. That's fine.
Yeah. So I mean, my dad was an assistant baseball coach at Iowa State when I was born, and it was one of those things. They dropped the baseball program. Iowa really didn't offer me much when I was coming out of high school, and Nebraska playing the College World Series. So I kind of, I did it, and we ended up going to the College World Series, and my best friends in life are from that experience. And so I don't necessarily regret it, but at the same time, my alma mater is something I don't know.
You don't actually put that on your playing card.
You're right. Yes. Right.
I did notice that you have playing cards for.
Oh, you mean these?
Yeah. Yes. Look at this. Wow.
Oh, we all get one.
This is it. Very nice. Thank you.
So,
circa Topps 1989. Yeah, not that we infringed copyrighted.
I identify, and you got like kind of the twins colors there too.
Yeah,
so I noted the baby blue and red scheme going on there.
That's when I ran a couple of years ago. I was like, you know what? I love that old school. It could be either from like the politics from way back when, or it could be the powder blue uniforms from the 80s from all the baseball teams. And so I had a friend who was a graphic designer, and she came up with our logo, and I loved it. And so that's kind of the theory behind it.
So how do you go from pitcher to politician?
Well, there's a decade that nobody likes to talk about, and that's when I was a paralegal.
Oh.
And after my baseball days, I thought I was going to go to law school, but I didn't know any attorneys. And so I worked at a bookstore, and one of the other coworkers there ended up going to a paralegal program. And so I thought that'd be a good segue. And then I was a paralegal, and then the 2008 happened. And all my friends, there was about 10 friends. This was a great law firm up in the Twin Cities that a lot of people would go to law school to work at. And then all my friends were getting burned out after 3 years. And it's really cutthroat at some of these huge law firms. And I realized, you know, I have this nice little niche area that like in e-discovery and technology and civil litigation. And so found something, and then I kind of went back to baseball a little bit and then worked a little bit more. And so, but I worked at law firms that were kind of political on both sides. And if you were running in the state of Minnesota, you'd probably go through the law firm. And so you could sit and listen to everybody. And then especially coming from Iowa, where we get the caucuses and everything, that's kind of where it all stemmed. But ultimately after the 2016 election, I went to visit my grandma, who's my inspiration in life. And my quintessential Grandma Fern story is I had my first off season of baseball. I moved in with her. The family asked me, she had a surgery, and they, can you go take care of grandma? I'm like, absolutely. And I would have to work a job at 5 a.m. and she would have breakfast on the table at 4:30.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, like that's just who she was. She's the most selfless person I ever met. And the last thing she told me before she passed was, you need to move back to Iowa. I was living out of state. And then she goes, you need to take care of our farm. And so I quickly decided to move back, and I called my parents up and I said, I have news. And they're like, we have news for you too. And so you go first. I go, I'm moving home. And there's this long pause. And I was like, well, what's your news? They're like, we're moving to Minnesota. And so my sister has twin girls. And so my parents want to be full-time grandparents in retirement. So I moved home. And then that led to me starting my own consulting business, because the best job I could find in Sioux City was $15 an hour with no benefits. And which I realized that's why a lot of kids I grew up with, they moved away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was on the hook for my own health insurance, and just one thing led to another. And I saw nobody on the Democratic side was running against King last cycle. And I launched and didn't know if I could raise $5, but I knew if I got out there to the people, I could do something different. And my only goal was to raise enough money to buy a used Winnebago RV, throw the logo on the side, and go nonstop. And that's what we did. And as a result, we moved the needle 24 points, which is third most in the nation. We got 25,000 more votes, and there are even Democrats in this district. And we outperformed the top of the ticket by 17%. And so we decided to do it again.
Yeah.
So here we are.
So now King's out, and I have to imagine that a lot of your, as you mentioned, you got more votes than there were Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that was anti-King sentiment. So now you're running against someone who is not Steve King, which that I could imagine would siphon some votes. How do you deal with that?
Well, I would disagree with that, in that I think King's been like that for years. And we've nobody's coming close to him.
Yep.
And so it was part that it was anti-King, but there's also we gave a reason for people to vote for us, I felt. And so I think a lot of people are just writing us off right now because it's not King. And they're like, oh, there's no way. And I hear it. I see it in social media. I hear it in different things. But I mean, what I'm seeing with our field program, what I'm seeing in our own internal polls, and I'm just everything, like, this is going to come down to the wire again. And a lot of this is like, especially the national punditry that we've seen, is the same folks that didn't give us a shot last time. And so, you know, especially this cycle, we don't know who's going to turn out to vote. With COVID, with mail, with everything, like, we don't know. And so I don't trust any polls right now. The only way I know how to campaign is get in the RV, go out there and talk to folks, talk to anybody and everybody. And you know, we'll let the chips fall as they lie.
And you're employing a very, shall we say, Chuck Grassley-esque strategy. And not that you want to draw that parallel.
No, we're going above the full Grassley. We're going the full Scholten, which is every town.
Not every county.
Not just every county, every town.
Yeah, JD, can you, for our listeners, can you explain a little bit, in Iowa, where is the 4th district?
Yeah.
From the Minnesota border down to
Missouri Valley. And then shoots on over, and then a few more counties, and then it goes up one county, and then all the way to Ames, and then Mason City, Charles City, and then the next county is Chickasaw, and so it goes all the way out there. And so all 39 counties, I've been to them, I went to them all at least 3 times last time, most of them a dozen times, and then this time we did a tour this last fall where we went to almost every county and did towns of under 1,000 people. We call it the Don't Forget About Us tour.
Sure.
And it was great.
So 2 years ago is when you kind of got in with both feet in politics.
Yeah.
And I guess when growing up, when did you know you were a Democrat?
You know, both my parents, it's weird because like my dad is kind of my mom's the more openly political one. She would make us, my sister and I, wear shirts that said like bread, not bombs.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I mean, I didn't know what it was. I was like, Mom, give me a Kirby Puckett shirt or something like that, you know? Yeah. Like, and like my whole life, like I split the years growing up, 6 months, 6 months, baseball, basketball, and that's all I wanted to do. And when I was 10, and she wanted to make sure I was well-rounded. So she would put me in piano. She would put me in different things, and none of them, I mean, I would do it for just a hot second, and then, but I mean, baseball and basketball, boom, that was it. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 10, she took me to see Senator Harkin speak in Sioux City, and it felt different. It was like, oh, this seems different, but I didn't know what it means. I was only 10. I wasn't political mm-hmm. then. And even when I was in high school, like I was active, but like I was an active voter. worked at the law firms that I got more active. And then when I lived out in, say, Washington, I voted, but I didn't volunteer. I didn't go to events. I didn't do anything. I just voted and stayed in tune. And then I saw what happened here, especially when my grandma died. That's when our family farm switched to my mom's generation. And I just saw what was happening in agriculture. And I was like, we can do better. And it's one of those things where where we're at in the economy, in the agriculture economy, it's so clear what we need to do, the next move that we need to do in order to save a lot of our livelihoods, which is enforcing our antitrust laws.
Oh, okay.
which, by the way, I mean, it's not a Democratic issue. I mean, Grassley talks about it all the time.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything, but I would argue. But it's something that is just clear as can be, because no matter where you want to go with agriculture, it is the first step is we have these multinational corporations that are bullying our farmers. And right now, I mean, you look at especially livestock, whether it's hogs or beef. In hogs, four companies control 70% of the market. In cattle, it's four companies control 85% of the market. And so of the consumer dollar, less than 15 cents makes it back to the farmer, which is all-time low. And when we broke up 100 years ago to this year, when we broke up the big five, they only had 40% of the market share, 45% of the market share. We're way above that. Mm-hmm. And it's not even creating new laws. It's just enforcing the ones we have.
So, of course, we've talked about this a number of times on this show. When we had that last cattle shortage and the prices peaked, and then demand or the supply resumed, but those prices never went down.
Right.
And so it was the packers were making the money.
Right.
And then it just seems like this is the different verse from the same song.
Oh, and this pandemic has put a spotlight on it. I mean, you see people are paying, the consumers paying more than they ever have for meat. You have the workers in Sioux City. If you work at one of the packing plants, they get paid the same that as in 1980. It's the same wage. And then you have the farmer side, which is getting squeezed. And so I just feel like what we're trying to do with our campaign is get these consumers, the workers, and the farmers together to build this coalition. Because right now the packers are dictating so much, and it shows our food vulnerability. You know, if that pack, like when Smithfield went down in Sioux Falls, it disrupted the whole market. But that happened last year too, where there was a fire down in Kansas.
Yep.
It disrupted the whole market. We're so concentrated. There's only 50 plants in America that produce 98% of our meat. And so if we're going to be a secure nation, we got to be a food secure nation. And I just feel like this pandemic put a spotlight on, you know, we got PPEs and ventilators from China. We're relying on another nation, you know. Mm-hmm. We need to have at least some form of that self reliance, and I just think that there's a huge focus that needs to go on that, especially if we're going to take on a nation like China economically. It can't just be the coast. It can't be Silicon Valley. It just can't be like Des Moines here. Every district matters, and especially the 4th Congressional District, which is the second most agriculture producing district in America. And so that's at the root of why I'm doing this.
Well, frankly, what you're saying is something that I don't care which side of the aisle you're on, you should be able to embrace, because it's anti-competitive, which
absolutely
you can be the most hardcore, straight-line Republican capitalist there is, and you should still embrace that, because transparency in the marketplace is what we lack, and that leads to anti-competitive practices.
Amen.
And that leads to screwing over the consumer, basically.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the producer.
Exactly.
So.
And the worker.
Yeah, it's suppressing right. Everybody.
So, but this is the thing, is like I, being a Democrat, I get called a socialist all the time. I'm like, no. I'm trying to have more markets. Like,
right. Sure.
I'm not a socialist.
So then what is the fix?
Yeah. So the first, I mean, that's the first step. And so if we decentralize the industry and making more
So are you proposing maybe that we break up the monopoly?
Oh, 100%.
So what do? You say that Packer A, you can only process this percentage, or you can't have this much of the holdings? Because then also it comes down to that some of these same Packers are the ones that are buying up all the farmland that comes up.
Exactly. It's vertical integration.
Yeah, exactly right. So how do you combat against that, or do you have kind of a plan in mind for that?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the breaking them up so it creates more jobs too, where there's one huge packing plant. Now there could be multiple packing plants, and here in the Midwest, we saw that in what it used to be, and those used to be the good jobs. When I was a kid, you'd go into Denison or Storm Lake and you could easily tell that person's working at the packing plant, and this one probably isn't,
right?
And so that's a huge part of it. I mean, it's also allowing I believe it was Harry Truman has this great quote of, the best way to secure a nation is making sure that our independent farmers are secure. And that's what we're losing right now. I mean, you look at, a hog farmer right now, you ask how they did in 2017. And because of, they have these contracts that they're kind of, I think a lot of them are stuck in. I love to ask them, how did you do in 2017? Most of them made cost of production maybe a little bit better, but not nothing thriving. Well, this CEO of China Pork, which owns Smithfield, made $291 million. That's more than Elon Musk. That's more than Tim Cook, And so, like, we have Tyson had record profits in 2019. We had Cargill just gave the family that owns it the biggest money back. Was it the dividends? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
They gave the biggest dividends they've ever had. And you see this in it. And but then the people who have the dirt in their fingernails, they're not getting paid a livable wage or nothing that substantial, not allows them to stay on their farm and make a dime. And so it's just balancing it out. That's all it is.
So do you have a specific idea in mind as to how those tiers would break out?
I mean, yeah. It's one of those things where this is going to be a substantial effort. And so we saw with the antitrust with Microsoft, that's the only thing that we can compare it in our generation. It just, it just hasn't been held in over 100 years. And the other part of this that it's almost full circle. So next year, I hope to be my first year in Congress. It'll be the 100-year anniversary of the Packers and Stockyards Act. And that was sponsored by a Republican congressman out of Northwood, Iowa. And Northwood is actually where my grandma grew up. And so, like, for me, this is like a calling. It's weird. Like, when I played baseball, I felt I was on this path. And then all of a sudden, you get off this path and just trying to search what's next. And then this has been, the last few years, it's just been a calling. And trying to, you look at even the influence you have on others, like the presidential caucus. Every Dem that ran on the presidential side, or every presidential candidate who ran on the Dem side, had enforcing antitrust in their rural policy. And I think that was a huge part because of what we were able to do. And that's, because I ran against King, I get more national exposure. And because it's Iowa and the caucus, you get more national exposure. And so, like, I was able to help with pushing that. And I worked on about 6 of the rural policies. And that was one of the biggest things I'm proud of that I've already done, but we still need to continue on.
Do you feel like this particular, you talk about your ag background, that this particular segment is your signature? Like,
oh, 100%. I mean, there was Mother Jones article did something on us, and they said, I'm the only candidate in America talking about the Packers and Stockyards Act, which I take great pride in.
Sure.
And again, it's not a Democrat issue. It's not a Republican issue. This is just an Iowa issue, and we have so many, politicians, and I'll say on both sides, that are getting paid for by the Packers. And
right.
So ultimately that's hurting our farmers, and we need people to stand up and have a backbone. And, I don't like politics, but I got to the point where I'm like, well, if I'm just going to complain about it, I better do something about it. And so this is all outside of my world. And I'd much rather just be on a baseball field coaching like my dad did or something. But at the end of the day, like, this is living up to the promise that I promised my grandma. and that's why I'm here.
Well said. I think that's a good time for us to take a break. We'll have a brief timeout, and we'll get into, you know, the real serious stuff.
Ooh.
If we haven't hit that yet.
This was the light. Yeah.
We'll do that next here on Dutch by Association. Welcome back. Here we are, segment number two, Dutch by Association. JD, we were just talking during the break about your memories of Sheldon, and mm-hmm. so you're familiar with the area. Tell us a little bit about how you feel like you can serve the rural Northwest Iowa, Sheldon, and the surrounding areas, and how that works versus the other part of the 4th Congressional District where you have the more urban areas. Because I think that we are, you know, we're all symbiotic. We rely on each other. There are certain differences between mm-hmm. the urban and rural areas. How does that work?
So I'm fifth generation Iowan, all in the district, first to be raised in town. And my dad's actually from Larchwood.
Oh, okay.
And so we... 4th of July was up in Larchwood, and then go on down for the Derby in Inwood, and then the other part is my mom's from the very northeast town, or just outside the northeast town in Lake Mills, and so we'd come up here and stop here or go up north and take Highway 9 across or 18, and so there's no really direct way of getting there, so we always hodgepodge and just worked our way there. And then I was actually born in Ames when we were living in Nevada, and then I was raised in Sioux City, so it's almost the four corners of the district.
Sure.
I don't hit that very southwest corner, I guess, but so I think, and then also just being with my dad out on the recruiting trail a lot and stuff as a kid, just saw like all these small towns and understand like I feel like that's one of my best attributes, is being that bridge between rural and urban, and so that's one of the things that I feel extremely comfortable with. I understand how difficult it is to live in, it's getting harder and harder to live in rural America. And one of the things what we found out in the Don't Forget About Us tour last fall was when we went into these towns of under 1,000 people, I mean, healthcare was the number one issue. Agriculture was probably number two. And then number three was keeping the local grocery store alive. I mean, you have Dollar General coming here undercutting and yep. Maybe by saying this, you guys aren't going to get a sponsor by Dollar General. And I apologize for that, but
it was never going to happen. Man. Never going to happen.
But
I couldn't endorse them with a straight face. Anyway, so.
But the reality is, I mean, they pay their workers $8-9 an hour. They come in, they undercut a local grocer. So we've met with several different grocers around the district, and they said when they come into town, they immediately lose 20 to 25% of their sales. And so then they can't stay afloat. And so you also, like, the second most agriculture producing district, farmers aren't making a dime. Dollar Generals are coming in, undercutting our local grocers. And you just, who are we doing this all for? Mm-hmm. And so that's at the root of kind of all this is that's it, you know? And I think there's two farm to table restaurants in the entire district. Not saying that that's the way agriculture is going to go or anything, but it's just, you know, I look at these towns and like if you had like this, something like that, and you get tourism coming down from Sioux Falls or something like that, I just feel that like we're missing out in the 4th district on having more local. And I think it gets back to like, it's, we have these policies of get bigger, get off the farm. And we've hit a point where, you know, we got to make sure that all farms matter, whether you're small, whether you're big, you have a role to play in all this. And that's one of the things, it's more of a side issue, what I feel that we could be doing, but we could create a farm to school, farm to prison, farm to community college, farm to nursing home programs, farm to military. And by doing so, it at most, it would be about 20% of the production nationally. But what it would do is create rural incentives and rural economy and rural jobs. And so in having regional food hubs, it's something that I feel that it would help with securing our nation, being a food secure nation.
So let's talk about you as a candidate now. We have Dollar General in town, mm-hmm. and we have, so I come from Sanborn, Dollar General, oh, yeah. there. I can understand the idea of Dollar General coming in, selling things for cheap, but not offering all of the wide range of good fruits and vegetables and other things right. that the grocery store does. Grocery store goes out of business. It mm-hmm. affects the health of your town.
Yeah. And healthcare costs go up.
So, mm-hmm. but how do you as a lawmaker, mm-hmm. this is capitalism. They're selling right. a product at a cheaper price, and I have a choice to go to the grocery store or go to Dollar General.
Right.
How do you as a lawmaker combat, I mean, is it a law to outlaw Dollar no. Generals or... Or how do you, I mean, I think everybody can see this and complain that this sucks right. and whatever, but how do you address that?
I think one of the things you, like what I see, one of the initial things is Dollar General has in tremendous amount of tax advantage being such a big company. And so why should we give, like, and this is, I think, an issue in the 4th District. I mean, you look at the backbone of this district, we're small business, where we came from was small business and agriculture. And there's tax incentives to get big, there's not tax incentives for small businesses. And that's why I'm so passionate about healthcare is I feel we're hurting small businesses because I have friends who want to start a business, but they are willing to take the financial leap, but they have small kids. Sure. They don't want to lose their health insurance.
So when you say you're passionate about health insurance, what does that mean? What does that mean? What do you want to do? What do you want to change?
I feel that we need to fight for universal healthcare. Okay. And, you know, as much as I don't want the government doing everything, but at the end of the day, like it's been a failure of our government. It's been a failure of our market, our healthcare system. We pay the most per country or per person out of any country, any developed country. And this is what we get, you know, and it's not a very good bang for our buck. And so I don't think it'd be too hard to transition into something much better. And you look at how Canada got universal healthcare. It was Saskatchewan farmers in the 50s that said, you know, we don't have employer health insurance. We got to do something different. And so I feel that there needs to be, we need to get off employer health insurance. I think it would be good for business. But
aren't there not people that are coming to the United States for healthcare procedures because of the flawed universal healthcare system in Canada. So having a government run institution, how can we do that effectively? To be fair, I'm not saying that the solution that we have works because it does not. Because I think, and a lot of that comes down to the insurance providers. But how can we put trust in the government for our healthcare, whether we live or die? That scares the absolute living. Right. Crap out of me.
Well, I think it's we need to figure out a solution to have. Well, here's one of my biggest frustrations. Where is a Republican plan in America? I don't think there's one person running for office that has a plan on the Republican side.
Sure.
So I feel like, you know what? Step up and let's find some commonality. What is the answer? You know, because I know the reality. The reality is this Casey's across the street. There's probably a donation box of someone who just got sick or someone who just got in the hospital. You know,
sure.
I see it all throughout the district. I see the mm-hmm. GoFundMes. I see the pancake breakfasts to help pay for medical costs. The reality in this district is we have to beg to help pay for medical costs. And we're the wealthiest country in the world. If we're the wealthiest country in the world, let's show it. You know, right. Let's have the greatest healthcare system. And you know what? We have Mayo Clinic. That's fantastic. But it's for people who can afford it, mm-hmm. you know? And I think this pandemic, what I realized on my block is if somebody down the street doesn't have their job, doesn't offer it, or they can't afford it, they don't, it affects the whole block.
Sure.
And you, I think as a society, as a nation, we got to be better than that. And so is it a market or is it something non-governmental? Yeah, that's fine. But like, we got to figure out a plan for it then, because if the last four decades, the last 40 years, this has not worked. And we're getting worse and worse, and we're paying more and more and getting less and less.
So does your universal health care, does that involve somehow pharmaceutical companies?
Well, we got to be able to have the government negotiate prices, because when we did our Don't Forget About Us tour, going to towns under 1,000 people in Hardin County, this woman said, you know, she needed an inhaler. And I think it cost like $244 for a 30-day inhaler. And she's like, doctor, I can't afford that. So the doctor gave her a cheaper one, less puffs, but it was $180. And she's like, again, I can't afford that. Finally, the doctor told her, just go to Canada. You know, again, we're the wealthiest nation in the world. We should be the place that people should go to, you know, like
yeah.
it's a challenge I feel for this nation. Like I love America, you know, we should mm-hmm. take pride and say, yeah.
But,
So here's something I hear coming right back as someone's listening to the podcast. Yeah. Well, that's just going to increase people not being wise about their health decisions because there's no onus on them to have to pay for it down the road.
No incentive.
Yep.
So like what? Like they would just
I'm going to eat poor and I'm going to smoke or whatever because I'm not going to have to pay for any repercussions of this poor behavior.
I don't think that's a motive.
Do you think that people are going to be like, well,
you've never heard that?
No.
Well, neither have I. I'm just trying to make good discussion here.
Oh man, you are destined for Fox News.
But what about this, Mr. Schulte?
Forget about this plumbing business.
That's the first time I heard that. I was a little.
Well, you think about that.
Okay, I am. No, I will. I will. I will.
I can't wait till we get free health care. Marlboro, here I come.
Oh yeah.
So I have a question.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting back to, you know, revitalizing agriculture in our district and whatever, I think one of the chief criticisms that I would have of our current administration and Congress in general, because I think they've taken part in it, is we are not following the RFS, Renewable Fuel Standard, right?
Was that a plant today?
Yeah, right. We have roughly a half dozen within a stone's throw of here, provide a lot of great jobs in our small towns. Drive a lot of demand for what we grow here locally, which is chiefly corn and then soybeans as well. Obviously not involved with ethanol, but it drives all of it. That would be my main criticism of our current policies. We're not following that. We're granting small refinery exemptions. Yep. Now, you as a Democrat, I'll say this. I think the Democratic Party in general, it's become kind of the fashionable thing to criticize big ag and ethanol. How do you view that? Because I don't think that's a valid criticism personally.
No. So one of the reasons why I decided to run initially is because there's not rural Democrats. Mm-hmm. And my two political heroes, Berkeley Bedell and Tom Harkin.
Because didn't it used to be the DFL?
Up in Minnesota.
I that's where I come from. Okay. So I was a Wellstone kid. You know? So like DFL. I always heard that term. Yeah. And you look at it
so
today.
I mean, you look at where the party's moving, it's more urban, more coastal. There's no, I mean, that's what we're seeing. And part of my, like, I fight my own party a lot. Like, I'd actually said the DCCC, I said, we're not accepting your help this cycle because, you know, we realize that there's just a lot of things that went into that.
Okay, so let me make sure I got this right.
Yeah.
You did not accept financial help from the DCCC?
Correct. We said, no, we're not accepting it, and we're going to do our own thing. And I mean, to be fair, last cycle, they didn't return my calls until super late, and we're just like, whatever. And then this time, they're like, we want you to run. We're all in. You'll be a top five race. And then I ended up saying, you know what? We launched, but they wanted their hands in everything. I'm like, no. I want this race to be run out of Sioux City, Iowa, not Washington, D.C.
And so that being said, you say you win.
Yeah.
So then how do you fight against Nancy Pelosi, the puppet master, the ones that run the marionettes?
I mean,
how does that work? Because obviously you're going to run counter to what the majority of the rest of the Democrats are in there to do, who are from the coasts, who have the gerrymandered districts that are basic. What? Well, you're rolling your eyes at me.
You're getting a little Alex Jonesy. Just saying.
Well, here's the thing. I the number one thing I feel that when people meet me, when they're like, oh, I like you. Are you a Democrat? And then they're like, oh, like, right. You know,
sure.
And so like, that's the biggest hurdle that we have to overcome is the party. But then when people listen to me, they're like, oh, I actually like you. That's how we got 25,000 more votes than there are Democrats last time. And it's because if you look on the back of your baseball cards, the first pledge is Iowa over politics or over party.
Political party.
Yeah. And the second one is I'll always show up. And so we don't have enough, like, so this is kind of how the whole system is either you get, most times you either get recruited or like these DCCC will help you, but in doing so, they have their claws in everything. And so then you kind of owe them.
Right.
And so then they have you, you know? And so when you get to DC, they're like, oh, we really need you to vote this way or something like that. And then you'll get like the lobbyists throw you some money and stuff like that. And we see that everywhere. And like that's why politics suck, to be honest.
Yeah, you know? Amen.
And mm-hmm. on both sides. Yep. Like, it's, it, you get these people who, you know, it's, I'm not there to push Democratic values. I'm there to fight for this district and the needs of this district. Getting back to your thing about the RFS, that's absolutely right. Like, this administration has just undercutted this and picked big oil over our farmers time and time again, and just stabbed us in the back. And so there's 4 billion gallons that are not accounted for. We talk about the horrible storm that happened and the damage and 8 million acres of corn that got destroyed. This administration destroyed 12 million acres because of the RFS. And so that's driven down corn prices. And so for me, not only am I pushing that in my party, and so, like, you have everybody, like, Democrats are big tent. So, like, the folks who are pushing for Green New Deal, I'm like, all right, well, ethanol plays into that because you have, let's push for a low carbon fuel standard because let's get for more pumps in ethanol. Let's work that. But then in doing so, also, we realize, you know, let's pay our farmers for their environmental services. So if any nitrate that comes off the farm, that's the farmer is losing out on their nitrate. They paid for that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if we can create buffer strips and keep that in, that's helping the farmer too. And if they're helping Iowa and the nation environmentally and to combat climate change, they should be rewarded for that. Let's incentivize them, because asking them to change anything right now when they don't have a dime is a dumb solution, I feel. And so, but getting back to, like, the RFS, this is a no-brainer. This, you talk about issues that are not Democratic issue or Republican issues. The RFS is an Iowa issue. Doesn't matter who you are, you need to fight for it. Basically, it's Republican senators, and the Republican senators from oil states, yes, have way more power than our two senators right now. I mean, it is what it is, and it's unfortunate. So that's why I feel like there's roles to be played by Iowans, but you can't just be so partisan on this. It's we got to work together because we're all in this, and like, our family farm, produces for ethanol, and so I have a stake in this. I mean, it's a very small stake. We're not that big, but it's something that again, if that's what I'm pushing my party to understand where it fits into all of that. Mm-hmm. One thing that I love to say that I don't think gets talked about enough with the renewable fuel standard is big oil pretty much controls the competition controls what's happening. So big oil is controlling what happens in ethanol. So I like to say, if Pepsi controlled Coke, how well would Coke do? So yeah, that's an analogy that I feel we need to get more out.
Changing gears on you a little bit.
You're not going to give another question like, so
something I made up,
but what about this?
So I'm going to start chugging jugs of butter.
So now what are you going to do, JD?
I want to go to a tweet, and the reason I want to bring this up is because of the area in which we live.
Okay.
We're sitting here in Sheldon. Yep. We're right on the border of O'Brien County and Sioux County.
O'Rab country?
Yes.
Yep.
And I want to go to a tweet that you had a couple weeks ago. You said, your campaign's philosophy stems from what you learned in Sunday school, that we can teach to love thy neighbor as thyself. Mm-hmm. Faith inspires many of us every day. Join our discussion, and then you're going to... Or you had that discussion on August 3rd. You had some retweets, but you also had some people comment to that tweet, not overly favorable about the fact that your campaign's philosophy stems from what you learned in Sunday school. One of them said, while I appreciate your thinking, that they go on to say, and I truly believe that we would be a better country if faith would be kept out of politics. How do you, as a man of faith, mm-hmm. How do you balance that, or how do you say my campaign believes that faith is an integral part of your policy stances, and then see Democrats come in, other Democrats come in and say, JD, you need to leave your faith at the door? How does that work for you?
Well, I mean, you know, you run on what you know, and you run on, like, what inspires you and is in your heart. And for me, I grew up in the church. And so, I believe that, like, especially a lot of the social justice part of it. But like a lot of this comes from, I took a pledge for a Matthew 25 pledge, and that is something that's near and dear to my heart. And,
what is that pledge, JD?
It's
roughly,
it's just to defend the most vulnerable.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where, you know, I don't talk about my faith a lot publicly, just because I feel like it's very inner for me. Mm-hmm. But like, I have no problem like, talking about, like a Bible quote here or there or something like that on the campaign trail or anything like that, just because it shapes me. If you look on the back of the RV, there's a cross on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I took some heat for that, but at the end of the day, like,
so how do you explain that? Just the same, just, you just say it's part of you and it's,
yeah, it's part of me. I mean, it's like baseball, you know, like it's part of who I am. It's a part of the background. It's part of the moment that got me to this point. And so, you know, this is actually something I talked with Harkin about too. We had a really good discussion about a lot of different things. And, one of the things we started talking about was like prayer in school. And he goes, JD, he goes, every test I took, I prayed. And so you can say like, there's a policy of taking prayer out of school, but like at the end of the day, you can't enforce it. Like it's you, like you can pray in front of anything.
Sure. So again, we're in Northwest Iowa. It's mm-hmm. heavy Republican country.
I've noticed.
Yeah. It's not news to anybody.
Yeah.
You can go back and see who's voting for who and whatever else.
Yeah.
I believe that a lot of the support Trump continues to get is because, not because of who he is, but because he's willing, or he has pledged to be anti-abortion. Okay. Now I think a lot of people in this area of the counties that we're in can be considered single issue voters.
Mm-hmm.
Abortion mm-hmm. is the key. One of the most popular pastors in the U.S., John MacArthur, has said that if you're a Christian, you cannot vote for a person or a party that kills babies in the womb. This is a question you will face in these counties.
Yeah.
How do you answer that?
Well, so for somebody who is, so that would be considered pro-life.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
So for someone who is pro-life, I say the commonality is, what's the goal? The practical goal, and that is to reduce abortions. The number of women who have abortions back before they were legal, it was pretty high. Like, I think it was like 1 in 4 or something like that. So what my goal is, you know what, how do we reduce abortions? We have universal health care. That has been proven that it'll lower it. You have education. Promoting education, promoting contraceptives. You raise the minimum wage. That is proven. It's an economic issue as much as other. I mean, mm-hmm. It is a moral issue. Don't get me wrong. But the reality, especially in this district and in Iowa, we've had 30 OBGYN units close in the last 15 years. So for the same people who are voting for this, how are they? I want them to see, get more active on saying, we should make it easier on women. Give them an opportunity, you know?
Yeah, because I think we just had one close local.
Rock Valley.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Or is about to, I think, in the next year or so.
Yeah. I know Webster City and Iowa Falls have since the last election. Mm-hmm. And so rural communities, it's getting harder. I'm hearing this throughout the whole district. Women have to travel so far. And what happened if there's something on the road or something like a detour, you know? Highway 18 has some nice detours, we found out today. And so like we need to make it easier on our mothers.
Sure. So would you say that J.D. Scholten would be happiest if there were no abortions?
I would say that, you know, the issue is that what I'd be happiest is if a woman has the opportunity to have a successful birth. That's the goal. And there's a lot of things that come with that. And I just feel like when it comes to pushing for more health care, ultimately, this issue isn't about whether it's right or wrong or anything like that. It's the issue from where I'm standing point for running for office. It's if the federal government should get involved in this. And so I'm saying, no, the federal government doesn't have the right,
should not get involved in this. And I think that is my direction in this.
Sure. So when you look at yourself in the spectrum of the Democrats in the House of Representatives, from super liberal to more conservative, where do you put yourself in that spectrum?
So I've learned in the last few years that it's not linear. It is this weird cube. I get retweeted pretty heavily by ranchers for Trump and, mm-hmm. and farmers for Trump.
Sure.
Because they, and I think it shocked to them when they realize, oh, he's a Democrat.
And he said, what?
Because, oh, I mean, you look at some of the things, especially a lot of cattle ranchers, they like, whether it's mandatory country of origin labeling, whether it's like, it's a lot of with the Packers antitrust stuff. It's a lot of transparency pricing and stuff like that. Those are all things I'm for. And they're trying to be for it too, but it's this weird mix where some of the more right wing ranchers are liking us. And so, mm-hmm. So it's not, I say, like, I hate labels. I'm 6'6". I like to play a point guard, you know, I sure. thought I was a shortstop until I outgrew it. And so, so like, I hate labels. I don't know where I'm at. To be honest, I'm this weird unicorn in the Democratic Party where I'm a rural Democrat and I don't know where I necessarily fit because progressives don't think I'm progressive enough and moderates think like I'm not moderate enough. I don't know. Like I'm some weird mix where I feel everyone. And after the last election, I got so many people coming up to me say, oh, thank God you're a moderate. Oh, thank God you're progressive. Oh, thank God. I feel like I'm a Harkin den. That's it.
Sure. Yeah.
So is that why you have the D? Is it because of Harkin? Was that kind of your guiding light, to speak?
I grew up working class, and I come from a long line of farmers and teachers, and just the lineage has been Democrat, and I feel that what I'm fighting for is the same that my ancestors have fought for as well, and just. You know, it's more working class than anything. And I don't consider myself moderate progressive, but I will call myself a populist in the fact that I'm fighting for, and like populism is really shifted under Trump and everything like that. And so I wouldn't say I'm right wing populism, but I am this populist who's like ultimately fighting for people, working class people and trying to. Just trying to really connect with people from all different backgrounds. And that's why every day we out on the trail, I'm like, it doesn't matter if you're white, black, or brown. Doesn't matter if you're Democrat, independent, Republican, or never voted before. We're going to try and go and earn your vote. And we've been doing that for several years now.
It's been in the news quite a bit lately about, you might say, mismanagement or manipulation of the U.S. Postal Service. It's kind of new, kind of fresh. I'm not sure what to believe, really, because there's a lot of theories being tossed about,
right,
about what's really going on there. But I guess my question is twofold, is what is your take on what's actually going on there? And then secondly, obviously, there are probably some issues with the Postal Service.
Yeah.
How would you, as a member of Congress, help fix that?
So one of the biggest issues, the Postal Service has to pay for the retirement benefits and healthcare benefits 75 years in advance. So they're paying for 2095 retirement. So people who have never even been born yet were paying for their retirement. And that was produced in law in like 2006 or 8 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And both parties have been in existence since then, have been in the majority, and they could fix it. And neither one has. The biggest thing I would say, though, is, and this is what we're seeing with Wheeler, head of EPA, let's put somebody in there that wants to do the job. And so the new guy who's been doing the job, he has $75 million invested in alternatives to the U.S. Postal Service, whether it's, I don't know if it's, I can't remember. There's three companies I saw, and I don't know if it's UPS or it wasn't FedEx, though. I think it was UPS and then two other smaller ones. And so, it's a service. It does it need to be adjusted and fixed? I believe so. You know, I think we should constantly evolve the Postal Service. But, you know, there's some things that we should not just we should come to an agreement that both sides don't touch. Like that is so important, especially to rural America. I remember this time of year, I always spent on our family farm because it was 2 weeks after baseball, but before school started.
And going on the farm, getting the mail was one of the most important parts of the day. You know, you see the truck coming and you just get excited. You
come
go out
on checks. Yeah, exactly. Come on, checks. No bills. No bills.
And for me, it was just like, Grandma, do you want me to go get it? And she's like, yeah. And so I'd run, go get it. And so it's so important. And you see during this pandemic, my neighbor down the street, she's an elderly woman. And so I got to be friends with our postal woman, and she checks in on that woman every day. And so like there's little things like that. And it serves such a big purpose, I feel, in our society. And so I feel we got to protect it.
So well, do you feel that this, the whole reason we're talking about this is purely political?
I feel like the person who is put in charge of it is trying to undercut it. And so like this DeJoy guy, like, you know, I think we need to put in rules of who should be put in these positions. And I don't think big donors should be put in these positions. Yeah. I don't think big donors should be put in ambassadorships.
Amen. Yep.
And like, let's clean up a lot of this crap that's going on. And it's money driven. Like there's no incentive to do things to help people. Right. There's no incentive. There's all the incentive in the world to help your own party, to help the big donors and to do all that crap. And it's like, that's what gets back. I hate politics. Like I don't like, but at the same time, if I don't get involved, then it's going to be the same old, same old. And so that's why we're trying to do something different. And sure, here we are.
So ambassadorships and the postmaster general, whatever his title is.
Yeah.
These are all people that are approved by our elected officials. So they have to go through an approval process. Well, no, like the Senate would need to approve an ambassadorship.
I suppose they're appointed.
So, that brings up into my mind, how do term limits play into this? What's your stance on that?
I would love to be for term limits. I have no desire to be a career politician, but before we get to term limits, we need to talk about the rolling doors or revolving doors from members of Congress to being a lobbyist. Because
you mean there's guys that don't win that become lobbyists? I never knew.
That's how everyone. They actually get paid. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, and this is a thing. Like, so if we had term limits, that would allow. So, like, let's say it's 3 terms or whatever, 5 terms. That would allow the lobbyist who's there for 40 years to have more power than the person who's running, because that member of Congress is just in and out.
Sure.
And
so
out,
how do you out. Stop that?
So then we have limitations on lobbying and restrictions on that. And so that is 100% what I'm for and continue to transparency.
So I'm going to tell you the same thing that I was told when I was going to start my business.
Okay.
I walked into the Sheldon Chamber and Development Corporation director's office and says, I have an idea for a business. And he sits back and he folds his arms and he says, how's your idea any different than the other 100 ideas I've heard this week? How can you, J.D. Shulton, go to Washington and say, I won't be changed?
Oh, I mean, there's one. I can only promise on my word.
Sure.
But I do feel that there is more and more remote. Like, we don't take corporate PAC money. And so I feel like that's a start, you know?
Yeah.
And so from there, then I feel like you can start building on things. And when I get there, I'm going to have all these lobbyists in my coming at me and doing all this. And it's about staying principled. Like if you don't have an ambition to be a career politician, then what are they going to do?
Right.
I mean, if I'm not getting my money from these people, from these corporations, if I get them just from people and I have enough to win off of that, I don't owe anyone anything.
So then let me ask you this, JD, what the hell are you going to be when you grow up?
You know,
don't make him spit all over our nice electrical stuff here.
You know, we need more people like this though, you know, like,
amen.
Yeah. Like, and that's why I'm doing it. And that's, you know, I get so frustrated with just, we elect these people who go there and it just, there's no substance or there's no
no backbone. They're just willing to bend over for their own party. And it's just, we need people there to fight. And we used to have that, you know, we used to have like Berkeley Bedell will get lost in history, which is unfortunate, but, I barely remember what he was like as a congressman because I think I was seven or eight when he retired with Lyme disease, but like reading his book and in 1982, he had a re-election poster that said the 1% controls our government. Does the 99% have a chance? And so when I had a chance to meet Bernie Sanders, I go, your 99% shtick. That's been done here since the 80s. I got a little, huh?
Well, you tried.
I did. I thought it was
he's
much
better
at
speaking than listening. So, yeah.
But like it's we used to in what he told me when I got to be friends with him the past few years before he passed and he told me about one of his he would have one fundraiser a year where a local farmer would donate a hog and charge everyone $20 and that was it. That was the one big fundraiser. Hmm. Now I have to raise millions of dollars to for a job that's only 2 years and then have to do it immediately again right when I win. Like it's insane. And so what the system is meant for, like the DCCC, they don't care about people like me. What they care about is someone who's a self-funder, someone who will like just raise money. That's the number one thing they care about. The one when you
can you be a professional beggar?
That's it. Yeah. They don't want a tour like this. You don't see candidates going out in an RV and going everywhere. What you see is people raising money. And that's the big thing. How much money can you raise? How much time did you spend on calling people and all this stuff? And like, yeah, we do all that, but we also have to balance it out with getting out there and trying to earn votes. Because at the end of the day, like I didn't get my issues and like on the back of the baseball card, the last three issues are fix, fight, secure, fix healthcare, fight for an economy that works for everyone and secure our democracy because special interests dictate it. I got those because I got in my car last cycle and went to all 39 counties, stopped on main streets and asked people. I didn't ask them like, are you Republican, Democrat? I was asked like, if you were in Congress, what would be, if you could change one thing, what would it be? And the number one thing was healthcare by far. Whether it's small businesses that couldn't offer it to their employees, even though they wanted to, or it's just like farmers, they don't get employer health insurance. And then you realize that like an economy that works for everyone, this economy is working the way it's supposed to. We had this huge tax break. Did you guys have great tax seasons the last couple of years? I didn't. I paid a crap load this past year. Amazon paid $0. That's nuts. They're making billions of dollars. And it just, who are we doing this for? Are we doing this for people or are we doing this for corporations? You know? And it just, it all gets back to like, I want to do something. And you know what? It's an uphill battle. But at the end of the day, I'd rather die on that hill than just say I didn't do anything at all.
I think that's a good point for us to take a quick break. Back with segment number three, where we actually get to the issues. After this. All right, welcome back. Segment number three here on Dutch by Association. We are joined by congressional hopeful J.D. Schulten. J.D., I don't want to like bring up old scars, but bring us back in the room what it was like the election night. That had to be, I mean, did you, first off, I mean, obviously.
It was surreal.
You think you're going to win, right? I mean, like,
we didn't know. I knew I was close.
Right.
And well, last cycle, it was like 15 months. I was trying to convince people that I could get it close. And that last little bump, it's in God's hands or something. Right. Something far beyond me. And so, and then I think it was 8 days before, it was the Monday, not the night before, but the Monday previous, before the election, there was a poll, and I'll never forget this, came out at 10 o'clock that showed we were within one. And from that moment, in the next 48 hours, we raised $650,000.
Oh,
yeah. Like, it was amazing because we have Act Blue and you press refresh and it was another 1,000. And just like you couldn't keep up. And it was nuts. It was out of our hand. It was just like, I didn't know who these people were. They're like, we want King out. Boom. Mm-hmm. And then the last 8 days, I mean, I was interviewed by everybody, Rolling Stone, BuzzFeed, Washington Post, New York Times, Des Moines Register, like all the local stuff and all the, it was amazing. It was surreal. And so the last whole week was just a blur. And so the night before the election, I was in Ames and I got to be friends with Sage Rosenfels. Former NFL quarterback, former Iowa State quarterback. So I called him up and I was like, hey, do you want to go to Iowa State campus and just go down? Because on Monday nights they have pickup basketball at the Lead Center. And I was like, do you just want to play pickup? I have a couple interns I have an intern and his buddies and we'll get 5-on-5. And we'll play. And it was the best thing before that, like all the stress and everything. Like for me, that was the best thing the night before the election I could have ever done.
A poor guy is playing prison rules basketball. I'm sure his intern's got a couple of black eyes. No ref here.
I will say we were 5-0 and I hit a 3 to win the game. And to be a little bit cocky, I was like, y'all better vote for me. And then the next day we were on campus and then took the RV back to Sioux City. We had a night watch. We had a watch party. And I guess if you're going to lose, there's two ways it could have been. You could have had the way we did it where we were up all night and then the last few counties came in and it didn't go our way. I mean, the other way would have been more, and like everyone got excited because we were ahead the whole night.
Yep. Yeah.
And then the other way it could have been is we could have got a huge deficit and then just chipped our way back in that. So I guess it was decent the way it went, but the right when it happened, I was like, I need a beer.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing all the like Des Moines Register, or I'm not Des Moines, all the Des Moines news stations and the Sioux City stations. I'm having it with a red cup and just like, they're like, well, what's next? I'm like, well, tomorrow, gotta look for a job. and I remember, and I tweeted out and this tweet kind of went a little bit viral. I said, well, oh man, what was it? It was, I don't have a job. I've been living out of an RV and I was single. But other than that, things are going all right. And I mean, it was tough. And having to talk with, I talked to Congressman King on the phone and I told him, I was like, hey, listen, he's like, oh, that was a dirty race and everything. I was like, none of it came from our campaign. We talk about what we're for, not what we're against. And so, I go, that wasn't us. And he's like, oh, I know. And then I go, with all due respect, sir, I hope you put a little bit more respect into the job and with what this district needs this cycle. And then a couple months later, he gets stripped of his committees for questioning.
Yeah. So, well, I will say I have a lot of admiration for how you handled yourself after that loss. I know someone who lost a very close race.
Jeez, here we go.
Okay.
And then moved out of the area in which he was running for a position.
Oh. Let me give you some background here. So Aaron is a failed mayor.
Oh.
So
successful city councilman.
He was a successful city councilman. He ran for mayor of Sanborn, population 1,500.
Give us every single citizen.
I was there today.
And so he much like you did his, but you know, put the signs out and did all this stuff. And the results came back in that night from the O'Brien County auditor. And when he found out that he lost, he called his friend and he said, the sun will not touch my signs when it comes up in the morning.
The sun will not shine on these signs. Again.
So you went and got him?
We pulled him up that night.
Good for you.
Pulled up every single sign.
Yep. Put our house up for sale.
Then he moved.
Wow. No, the house. That's how it happened. That's not really why it happened. And now we live out in the country.
Oh, nice.
A much nicer.
Yeah. And he hasn't volunteered for anything since.
It's tough.
It's a burn.
You're really due for a failed supervisor run, I feel like. Just saying.
You know, like I look back on it and like the pros and the cons. And I think one of the things that just melts my heart is like getting so many more votes than there are even Democrats. That's a big deal for me. But mm-hmm. also in Woodbury County, Congressman King has never lost. And Reynolds got 55%, and I think we got near 54%.
Wow.
And so that shows like where I'm from, like the people voted for me.
Sure.
And that means a lot to me, I'll say.
So
that.
Moving forward, where do you spend your time? Is it better to spend it more here where hopefully you can do the more votes than there are Democrats thing? Or do you spend more time in a Democrat heavy area? What do you do from here to the election?
Can you tell me where the Democrats are at in the district?
They have a few colleges here.
No. It's everywhere. You know, our campaign's about going everywhere. That's our MO. It was last time, it is this time. And so I like challenges. So give me that challenge. Tell me, you know, there's some people I know I'm never going to get, but there's a lot of people out there the amount of Republican farmers in this area that I've talked to and have heard, there's probably five of them off the top of my head I can name, but I'm not going to.
That have all said
the same thing. I'm a lifelong Republican. What you're saying in agriculture is exactly right. And they're like, I'm conservative, but what you're saying in this, and that's their livelihood. And so, and this is what we've been working on for 3 years, telling like, you know, I'm not asking you to be a Democrat, but I'm asking for your vote. And so at the end of all our rallies and stuff, I always say two things. One, I ask for your vote. Two, I ask for you to pray to make sure the RV lasts until November.
How many times have you had to have that serviced?
Most of the summer, but it was because we were home and I was like, oh, we could do this. Like there's a lot of little, it came in with a lot of Band-Aids at the end of the last cycle. It's not meant for what we use it for. Now it's, we got a new converter on it. And so like, you won't hear us coming in from 10 miles away now.
Let's take a moment. I just want to highlight your staff here. You've got a couple people with you. Give a shout out. Who do you have with you?
Yeah, I got Lauren who works on my comms. And then I have Adam who's my manager and also my chainsaw buddy from last weekend.
Some time.
When the derecho hit, we had a couple things planned. But then we had Thursday, Friday, and Saturday open. And so I asked him, I was like, do you just want to go down there and help? And he's from Michigan, and so he's well rehearsed.
You feel very comfortable.
Yeah. And so he knew everything what we needed and everything, and just bam, we went down there and we chopped up a lot of trees. We moved a lot of branches. It was humid. It was hot. It just soaked. I had to change after every place, Yeah, I mean, so many people are just, I mean, to see a whole field of corn just flat.
Well,
just
we've seen pictures, right?
But to see it live is, I mean, just rips your heart out. I mean, in 1 hour, that's a whole year's worth of salary. That's whole worth mm-hmm. everything and just heartbreaking. And I mean, they're going to get a little bit of crop insurance and things like that, but that's still not, the prices are low and it just... It's heartbreaking. And then one of the biggest things, we had a supporter who's wheelchair bound, and we just put a thing out saying, if anybody needs help, just hit us up. Mm-hmm. And she didn't reach out, but friends were like, hey, we saw your poster, JD's in town. And so we helped her in her front yard, and it worked out great because the city of Ames had their pickup people right there. And so the minute we chopped down the tree, they were there and just got it. And nice. It worked out great. And so now she can see the street and she can go roll on down the sidewalks and everything. And so just, you know, it's, you do the best you can and just help out. Like, I feel this job is about service. Like it's politics. It's about serving the people.
If you're doing this for your own good, you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so and that's why like number two in the back of the card is I'll always show up. I'll hold town halls. Hold me accountable. That's fine. You know, we may disagree, but that's what democracy is about, is having that engagement, working with people. Like, one of the things I want to do is have a grant writer on staff, because all the towns that could use more money, use a program that maybe they don't know about, and doing something like that. Like, that's my goal. My goal is to serve.
Yeah. And it gets back to my Christian roots. I'll say that
the grant writer thing. I mean, that's a heck of an idea. Because so I'm on the city council here in Sheldon, mm-hmm. and we've had that.
Do you wear cargo shorts then?
Yeah. He's part
of every meeting year round, right?
So you've met Ty Rushing. I see. So I am one of the reasons for the memes. But anyway, we had talked. That there are so many opportunities lost to the lack of having a grant writer,
yep.
Which why is it so flippin' hard to do in the first place? Right. But that's not here nor there. But yeah, that I think that's a heck of an idea to have a staff grant writer to help do this for our district.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, JD, I think our listeners learned a lot about you.
No. We're not done yet. I got other questions.
Okay.
Can you teach me how to throw a curveball?
Yeah.
Two fingers on the one seam, right?
I got a ball in the RV, but so last year.
I'm tempted now to follow you to the campground and bring my son. Let's play some catch.
Can we have a catch?
I'm more interested in watching Wayne try to pitch. Not exactly Randy Johnson over there with his 18-inch arms.
What is that? Okay. The big sexy...
The big unit?
Sidney Pascal.
Bartolo Colon.
Bartolo Colon. That's a throwback there.
Well, no, Bartolo Colon.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. When he hit the home run a few years ago.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Greatest moment of baseball history.
Oh, my goodness.
No, so last year at the state fair, so it would have been this past weekend, we go down there. The only time I've touched a ball in the last couple of years was to do a commercial. To be honest, it's all the radar gun there. And I'm like, I'm doing it. And I hit above 80 miles an hour. So I got the biggest minion. this is when all the presidential candidates are down there. They're doing their big caucus thing,
sure.
In the soapbox. And so I walk past all the press with this big old minion. I'm 6'6", and I had a tough time holding it. So, but then right when this pandemic happened, I ordered a couple dozen baseballs and a net, and I was like, if I train, I wonder if I can hit 87. And so this weekend I'm gonna throw in most likely the next time you see me or picture me, it'll be with a sling or something. But by God, I'm gonna try.
All right. This leads me to probably the hardest hitting question of the day. Okay. A very controversial topic on Twitter today. 3-0 count as a pitcher.
So
ethically, okay. Is it okay?
Yeah. So even as a pitcher, don't go 3-0.
Yeah, exactly. All right. You might have just gained my vote. I don't know.
So my mom, I know when she's watching a baseball game, cause she'll text me. She goes, that poor pitcher's mother.
She's been there a couple times. Yeah. Huh? Yeah. But that was interesting, though, because they talk about sportsmanship, you know, like, yeah. You don't do that. But then what happens? The next batter, he throws at him, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
That's kind of an unwritten rule, too.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Right.
I feel in politics, there's a lot of unwritten rules that need to be written after this administration. I'll say that.
A very good point.
Yeah.
To highlight one of the reasons that you're here, you have a couple of interesting gatherings coming up. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I don't know when you're going to post this. So
it'll be tomorrow.
Okay. So tonight we're going to be in Sibley at the fairgrounds up there. And we're doing parking lot rallies. Basically, you can come in. If you want a social distance, you can stay in your car. We're going to have a broadcast up to 300 feet, which is the legal limit.
For the FCC.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much, I give a little spiel, open, answer all questions, and then give a little spiel at the end and just show who we are. And I invite everybody. Like I mentioned before, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat, independent, Republican, never voted before, we invite you there. And we only have one rule, and that's just respect. And it's, my mother doesn't agree with me on everything, you know, but that's fine. We can have a discussion about
that. But even if you're a convicted felon like Mitch,
hey, good news, you can vote this year.
That's terrible. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry.
No, but
accused.
So last cycle, I had my 20th high school reunion, and we took a group photo, and I realized a person to my left and the person in front of me were felons. They couldn't vote for me, and now they can vote this year, and I think that's awesome. And so I tip my hat to Governor Reynolds for doing that.
Not that I want to get back into serious stuff, because I know that your staff is going to shoot me if I keep going. Schools are coming back in session.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? As far as having in place learning and versus distance and that sort of thing.
It just feels like when we shut down in March and when we shut down the schools, this should have been our number one priority, was getting them back. And you see with, I mean, Big Ten football, you know, the millions of dollars that aren't going
to
be.
I saw a headline today. Iowa is poised to lose $100 million. Yeah.
I mean, it shows how significant
Boo-hoo.
This is.
Says Iowa State.
Yeah. Cyclone fan here. Sorry.
So, I mean, it's a tough, in the way that we're going about this, like we have, I feel like we have a 1 foot in, 1 foot out approach, and we've had it all summer. And it's just like, how do we get out of this? I felt we shut down with a goal to do something, but we never figured out what that thing was. And that's the heartbreak of the situation. And so then came, I think, Memorial Day weekend, and people started like, oh, I need to get out and stretch a little mm-hmm. bit. And then like, oh, this felt good. And it's almost back. And like,
have you ever been to Lake Okeechobee?
Yeah.
That happened real quick.
Yeah.
Everyone got out. Oh, and everyone got sick. And then we're going to close it all down again.
So, I mean, that's, I just wish there was leadership at the top that said, okay, if we're going to shut down, this is why we're doing it. And it's this A, B, and C is what we need to do to get out of this.
Do you feel that the onus is on the president, the governor, or the mayor?
Well, and here's the thing is they keep on passing the buck down. And so now I feel horrible for a lot of our superintendents who have to make a choice that no one's going to be happy with, it mm-hmm. feels like. And I feel horrible for the teachers. And you know, there's so many people who are just trying to do the right thing and they get stuck in this political battle. And, you know, my hope in a lot of this, as we come out of this, I think there's a lot of things that I hope we can come together as a nation, because you know, what's hurting us is all this, like just head button mm-hmm. against each other and nothing getting done. And like I mentioned, the no incentives in DC of getting stuff done, you know. And this is what gets back to, we mentioned China earlier, is like, that's my hope, is that, and my mindset in politics is when I played baseball, I didn't care where my shortstop came from. I had a shortstop from Florida, Delaware, Puerto Rico, Texas, wherever. I didn't care who my left fielder voted for, but we worked together for a common goal. And that is not being talked about enough and not being done enough. We should incentivize things getting done. And if we're going to take a nation of China's size on economically, that is where we need to start coming together and saying, hey, listen, I know that you don't feel this way on this one issue. I don't feel this way on this other issue, but we got to figure out a way as an economy. Where do we want to go? Because right now the economy feels like it's going towards technology, going towards green economy. And China has more patents on those things than the U.S. does. I want to be that American dream back again. I want to have a place where we all do better. In doing that, I feel we can come together on a lot of issues when we have that common goal and that common purpose. And so
if your campaign had one theme song, what would it be?
Just because you mentioned Tom Petty earlier, probably Won't Back Down.
Nice.
I like it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So. Wish I knew it.
Sorry,
yeah. Aaron's the lame Amish one of the crew. Yeah.
Could you pick a Floyd Kramer song?
I'm glad I gave that answer. I remember when my sister was in college and a similar question was asking, we were out with her roommate and her roommate's boyfriend, and they asked him like, what's your relationship song? And he's like, without missing a beat, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Yeah. So that relationship didn't work out.
All right. One last thing. I want to give you just an opportunity as we wrap this up. Yeah. Just want to give you one last opportunity to, you're talking to the best folks in the world here.
All right.
Those of us in Northwest Iowa.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you one more chance to tell your story.
Oh man!
Give me the elevator pitch of why J.D. Scholten mispronounced Scholten is the one to vote for.
I think one thing that we talked a lot about tonight is how, like, what we need in Washington, I think a lot of us agree, is something different. And so I think that's part of the reason why Trump got elected is they wanted something different. And so I'm coming at this far different than most politics and most politicians have in the last few years. And so and it all roots back to keeping that promise to my grandma about protecting our family farm. And at the end of the day, it's enforcing our antitrust laws so farmers are allowed to stay on their land and make a dime, and that's what this district's all about, and that's what I want to go to DC about.
And I can appreciate that. You can hear actually the cicadas in the background.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. A moniker to the end of summer. I'm looking at your baseball card, and you're a lot more tan in this picture, so you may want to work on that.
I'm mostly Norwegian. So
you don't say.
Yeah, and so
the 6'6" really white guy did not give it away.
At lunch today, I had to tell the waitress I ordered two tacos, and she's like, "Do you want salsa?" I go, "Anything above ketchup makes me sweat."
Yes, that's hey, that's my story. In common with Aaron. Yeah. Do you have any French dressing for the tacos?
All right, let's go ahead and put a name in on this sermon.
All right, join us again next time for another episode of Dutch by Association, a Northwest Iowa podcast. Special thanks to our title sponsor, Super High Tech. Have you socially distanced yourself from your phone permanently? Super High Tech in Sheldon, Orange City, and Sioux Center has the right replacement at the right price. On the web at super-ht.com.
Did you just get a text from your mom?
No.
No. How you doing?
Yeah, that poor pitcher's mother.
And you can learn more about the podcast and just who we think we are by hitting us up on the socials. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at DBA Pod. And coming up soon on our website, dbapod.com.
And JD, where can we find out more about you?
Scholten for Iowa, or Scholten for Iowa, for those who want to do it. And it's numeric 4 for the 4th Congressional District, or social media, it's JD Scholten. So. At JD Scholten.
And we appreciate you taking the time. We appreciate
thanks for reaching
Adam
out.
And Lauren and for doing the actual work. You know, you got to come here and drink beer. So
I will say I have an amazing staff, especially since the shutdown in campaigning, the time of COVID, it's been crazy, but I have an amazing staff that's been able to adapt. And I just, my name happens to be on the ballot, but they're doing so much work behind it. I'll say that.
Well, good work. We look forward to seeing what you do in the future. It's very bright.
I appreciate it. Thank
all
you.
Right. Thank you. Hey, baby. There ain't no easy way out. Hey, yeah. We're still